It's Jeremy White and Joe DiBiase.
I am officially at the age where, when I go outside at night now, I will wear long sleeves and long pants even if it's 95 degrees.
What? Because of mosquito bites?
Yeah,
because
I can't get eaten up anymore.
Just put bug spray on.
Doesn't work.
What do you mean doesn't work?
I mean, bug spray does not work.
I mean, it might not be 100%, but it definitely works.
Is the biggest lie ever. It does not work.
It's a conspiracy, man!
You're claiming the entire bug spray industry.
Yes.
Is false.
I'm saying to you that I am immune to bug spray. Doesn't work.
The tiki torches or scams.
Might as well be all these lessons you're trying to get sold for golf on Instagram. All these training tools. Bug spray. Lie.
They're feeding us a bunch of lies, man.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on the home of the Bills. WGR Sports Radio 550.
Hey, everybody. My brother-in-law, Tucker, told me yesterday he's on board with me with that. Says it doesn't work. Maybe there are just some of us out there it doesn't work for. Not only does bug spray not work, the homeopathic efforts my wife has, like she'll give me lavender spray or something. Oh, they hate lavender. They hate that. I can spray bug spray on my arm, and then I'll watch 15 minutes later as those bugs are just pulling up like it's a happy hour. Doesn't work.
Harvard Health. Over-the-counter bug sprays work well to repel ticks and mosquitoes through one of three common active ingredients, oil or lemon eucalyptus.
Oh, yeah, of course. I've sprayed the lemon. Who funded that study, huh?
It's in the bug
who
spray.
Who funded that study? You know who did? Big Deet. That's who. Big Deet. They're trying to sell that chemical to you. Doesn't work. Does not work.
Eucalyptus. I mean, hardly a chemical.
Eucalyptus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Like I said, just like lavender. Oh, try this. This will work. Mm-hmm. Sure it will.
Are you against all repellents or just bug repellent then?
Well, I don't know. I haven't tried to wear deer repellent or anything like that. We do have these little sticks.
Yeah, Jeremy repellent is just put an egg salad sandwich in the room. I mean, is that's repellent? Does that not work?
That'll work.
Yeah.
That's true. That works.
Eggs. If there was a plate of eggs in here, I'm sure you wouldn't walk in the room.
I would switch rooms with Owen and be like, yo, I need to go in there.
Yeah.
We have these little stickers you put on your shirts that are supposed to ward off mosquitoes and bugs. Guess how good they are?
Not
that good. They don't work.
Those I'm open to being a scam.
The stickers?
I've worn those a couple of times, and that I feel like I've noticed never working. Bug spray, I don't. Bug spray, I feel like if I spray it on, like I am not getting bit up nearly as much.
What do you think the difference is between the two? One of them emits a scent to keep bugs away. The other emits a scent to keep bugs away.
I think the difference probably is if you have the sticker, it's kind of like the alarm system sign at your house. Like, hey.
You think the bugs are reading it?
The bugs are sensing it, and they're like,
That's funny.
And then they land on your skin, and they go, oh, wait a minute. You just have the sign out front. But if I've got the spray on my arms and my legs, and they land on my arm with the bug spray, then it's, oh, I'm off. Let me jump right off this because it's here.
But the bug spray is not lethal to the bugs. They just don't like it.
Yeah, but if you land on it and it's there, then it's not lethal.
No, you're not going to see a bug land on your arm and then die, right?
No, but when it flies away, I mean, I have no idea. I guess not.
The cracks in the bug spray defense. Hey, everybody, good morning. Jeremy and Joe, we're in studio here. In studio after five straight shows at camp, right?
Well, yeah, last Tuesday.
Thursday, Friday, Monday, Tuesday, yeah.
Last Tuesday was last
so
time
So five
we were
straight shows at camp, and we're here. And, of course, the big news is Maxwell Hairston.
Yes.
And what's going on with that? So we are left with, it's not that cryptic of a post. We just don't know what it really ultimately means.
Yeah.
Maxwell Hairston posting beyond blessed. Now, that could be a million things. That could be a person that has a torn ACL finding a blessing in being in the NFL.
Right.
And it's okay, I'll come back from this. You know, like everybody's relationship with whatever. It could be a million things.
Yeah.
Could be it's not as bad as feared. It could be that he's totally fine. Could be a lot of things. But yesterday, we went through it. And going through it for a young player that I think Bills fans are really counting on to make a difference for them this year.
Yeah.
It was a rough feeling yesterday watching him down, watching teammates react, And it always is like that, where you really, more than anything, since we're not trainers on the field pushing on the knee and feeling all, you look for their faces. I can remember a training camp where the story was Reuben Brown went down with an injury and slammed his helmet on the ground. Mm. And hearing that made me think, oh, it's out for the year. He wasn't.
Remember when Trey White, this isn't a game, but against Miami, when he tears his Achilles and he's laying on the field and we don't know what has fully happened, he rips his helmet off and, like, chucks it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's bad.
It's mad.
It's bad.
It's about being mad.
Yep.
Yep. And or frustrated or devastated or angry, whatever.
Yeah.
And all the reaction yesterday, watching the video, John Scott initially posted the video of the trainer checking Hairston and the players around him, Benford, Trey White, you know, when they're over there. Hairston's got his head kind of like buried in a teammate's shoulder for a little while there.
Yeah.
And that's one where it's just like, oh, man, I hope he's all right. I hope he's all right. So, ugh. This training camp has been, if I could just zoom out, this training camp's been terrible, right? I mean, it's fine as training camp, but everybody's getting hurt to varying degrees. And that's the first real serious one where you kind of want to say, you know what, maybe no more camp. Maybe just stop this thing.
Yeah, Sal put it this way yesterday, that right now it's mostly been the volume of injuries is the concerning thing, not the severity, until Hairston. And that could be, you know, a lot of the, like, Alec Anderson and Dwayne Carter added yesterday and these other guys. That could just be you got anything wrong with you at all, like, we are just going to hold you out. We're going to be conservative. But with Hairston, you know, like, when he posts that, I thought that way about the first line, beyond blessed. Like, okay, that could mean anything.
Yeah.
That could mean torn ACL. That could mean he is just trying to find the positive in it in a heartbreaking situation for him. But then when he writes, thank you, God, I don't know. The thank you part makes me think, like,
it's not that serious.
That sounds like relief to me.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that it can't be a serious injury. I mean, it could be what happened with the Cowboys guy the other day. Their starting left tackle, who everyone thought had a torn ACL, and even to the point where I think Rappaport and Schefter tweeted, like, they think it's a torn ACL. And then a couple hours later, it's, oh, no, it's not. 4 to 6 weeks. And if that, like, I would sign up for that right now with Hairston.
Oh, yeah.
4 to 6 weeks. But that, for him, would still be tough. I mean, that is a month out, if that's the case, in a positional battle that would basically be over at that point. Like, Tre'Davious White is your number two corner to start the season. But it could be he could have a rookie season and at some point get on the field. Because yesterday when he goes down, I'm thinking about how far back you set a guy's timeline to figuring out if he can help you, to figuring out how much you should count on him, to evaluating the draft pick itself.
Yeah.
Like, if he was down for the year, how long before you would feel real comfortable evaluating the pick, the merit of the pick? You don't even know if he's good. And if he came out in year two, he's basically, what we hear at camp, he's a rookie again. And is he starting to start in year two? Or is he still behind a veteran? And then he finally gets in, and if it doesn't look as good, that could get blamed on the injury. Like, oh, he is, you know, still recovering. It's a first year back from an injury the guy's never had. I mean, it's like a 3-year timeline to even feeling like you could fairly start to figure out how good the player is if that's the injury. And if it's not, you know, you get to start it up hopefully in like a month or so. I think is a best case scenario still.
Yeah, the longest timeline is his time with the Bills ends and we say, well, maybe we never really got to see what he was because
right.
of the torn ACL. Again, it's not a torn ACL yet. We don't know that.
We're
talking still in potential. So taking you through some of the timeline of yesterday, my brother-in-law is an athletic trainer for the Ohio State hockey team. So his job is literally to, when a player has an injury, go out and push on the knee like the guy on the field did for the Bills. So when that video comes out, I sent him a message. I'm like, what is this? What test is this?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that's an ACL check. Because I'm an idiot that doesn't know this. When I saw the trainer tap in the back of his calf, I thought, what is this test? An Achilles test? I'm not a trainer, you know?
Yeah.
I reach out to an athletic trainer. He said, that's an ACL test. And then, you know, kind of got into, it's a lot about feel, so the trainer that's doing it would have a better idea of what he finds there. But I see XYZ. And I have another friend, same field, I see XYZ. So, you know, it's just I reached out to trainers. It's a little bit like Thigh Doctor on Twitter, if you know Thigh Doctor.
Yes.
Who is, of course, constantly checking Bill's injuries, how players are walking. And, yeah, you can't know everything. But Thigh Doctor on Twitter had the same takeaway, which was, okay, this is this test, and it looks like this, but we won't know. And I'm surprised we don't know yet. I think that we don't know, whatever, we're all just speculating like fools here, right? Because we want the Bills to be okay and the players to be healthy. I feel like that we don't know is good news. If it were met with finality, I feel like we would know. I feel like
maybe
it's gone, boom. The Bills would have had the test done yesterday, right? Unless they're going to do the thing where they, what, do they wait for swelling to go down?
That's the thing I'm wondering, because do you remember Vaughn for this?
Vaughn was, it's not torn. It's not as bad as previously thought. Then they went in and looked, and it was torn.
But do you remember the timeline in that?
Was it a week later?
It was longer than that. Okay. Because like, what I remember is, think everyone, like kind of the same thing with Harrison. Like it immediately happens, and everyone's like, oh, that's the season. And then I think it's the next day that it's, all right, it might not be. Like, they feel like it's still intact, but they got to wait for the swelling to go down. Von Miller got injured on Thanksgiving Day, that's November 24th, and he was not officially declared out for the season and have a torn ACL until December 7th.
Okay, a full week, basically.
So it was almost
a week
2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
It was almost 2 weeks later that we finally got clarity, like, okay, yeah, the ACL is torn. And maybe that's rare. Right? Like, maybe it is more often that you're going to find out within a day of it happening. But I wouldn't just assume that we couldn't find out like in a couple of days or even in a week, because it did happen. It happened once before with the Bills. So I don't know. Like, I'd like to hear news today. What would the news, anything that isn't it's torn, I think is probably good news.
Yeah.
You know, like, even like if there was like a strong message, like, oh, it's intact. Not even like a Vaughn tweet that we had right after, which is, you know, we're not really sure. We need the swelling to go down before we really know. Like that, you know, we'll be hanging on a wire, I feel like, still, if that's the news update. But I'd be bracing for something even more positive than that.
Yeah. Well, then there's the question, how much would it matter? You know, the Bills are good. They've had injuries.
Yeah.
They lost Matt Milano for most of a season multiple times, right? They lost Tre'Davious White multiple times to an ACL and then to an Achilles. They lost, who else are the big injuries that guys were gone for a long time?
Milano seasons.
Milano and Tre White, and is that it? Then I'm Daquan Jones is out for stretches.
Yeah, I missed the Bengal playoff game. Right?
Yeah. But
Micah Hyde is early in the season, right? Like, is that week two?
That's right, Micah Hyde.
And he's done for the year, and then that's Hamlin comes in and starts.
And every single time that has happened, regular season-wise, how much has it really affected the Bills? You know, they've got a couple players that are able to lift the rest of it, of course.
Right.
Josh Allen's a big factor here. If Hairston were to be gone for the year, we would all be thinking what might have been about him, and if the defense would be a little bit better, but it's not, and I don't say this to diminish his importance, because we all know the importance for the Bills. It comes down to really a game or a couple plays, but it's not like the line's moving on them. The over-under on wins,
anything like that.
The line against Baltimore is not moving. You know, teams suffering big injuries, like, congratulations, it's next man up. In this case, it's Tre White, and he's having a good camp. By all accounts, Tre'Davious White's having a good camp. And if we have to deal with the news that Harrison is out for the full year, I think it's disappointment for him. It's disappointment for Brandon Bean and Bobby Babich and Sean McDermott, because, you know, we want to evaluate the picks they make, and we want their picks to be good. And bad luck like this and a non-contact injury and a freak trip up, even if it is just set back a little bit, how much of a difference does it make? Because my answer is probably not that much of a difference, but that I'm willing for that to be wrong, only because we don't know how much of a difference he was going to make anyway.
Right.
If it's a player that's established, if it's Ed Oliver or Deion Dawkins or Spencer Brown or Khalil Shakir. Like, I know what those guys bring to the Bills. And I don't know what Maxwell Hairston brings yet. So that it's an unknown kind of leads me to, well, I don't know how big of a difference it makes. I've seen the Bills play without Maxwell Hairston forever. What's one more year of that? I don't hope that that's the case. I just don't know how much I should really feel about the effect on the year if, in fact, he's gone.
I mean, sure, they hadn't had him, but he's a huge it's not just that Hairston isn't out there. It's anybody you could have had in the first round is not contributing for you. Like, every other team in the league at the moment, I think unless there's somebody else that's had something, if this is the injury, has their guy producing for them. So everybody's improved in that way, and your guy would be out for that. So sure, we don't know how good he was going to be, but what were they trying to have happen? They were trying to have Max Hairston eventually come in, start, whenever that timeline was still being decided and is still being decided, to get a skill set they haven't had in the offense. To have a speed corner that can jump routes, that can run with any wide receiver in the league, just on the athleticism part of it, on the speed part of it, and hopefully give the Bills a cornerback duo they haven't had for the entire time that Bean and Sean McDermott have been here. They've tried, right?
Two studs.
They drafted Kyrie Elam in the first round when they still had Tre'Davious White.
Right.
Elam's not good in the first place, but then White ends up getting hurt. But by the time Benford ends up, like, oh, this guy's really good, Trey White's going through injuries, you never really get to see this team with two really good corners at the same time. It's always been one stud and then just a guy. And
that's always been kind of good.
It has been kind of good, but do they think that's one of those things that they could use when they get to these playoff games?
Yeah, they talk a big
Do they feel like that? Is that one of the areas that a Kansas City or a Cincinnati exposes them because they're attacking Kyrie Elam? Could tell you that last year.
Oh, right. He's a backup, though, in that spot. He's not supposed to be even on the field. I mean,
The Chiefs are attacking Levi Wallace, I can tell you that. That was happening in that 13-second game.
Are the teams that are beating them rolling out two elite corners?
But
no.
Do I even need elite? Like, give me two guys that are really, really good.
Do have two guys that are really, really good because you have Taron Johnson. Are the Chiefs are the Chiefs beating the Bills because they have three really good corners? Did the Bengals beat the Bills because they had two really good corners? I don't know. There's a million ways to skin a cat. I understand that. And, of course, it makes sense to pursue having as many good players as possible. I'm always going to be on board for that. But this has been the best pass defense in football for 8 years, basically. Over the last 8 years, and maybe this is a sign of how much better it could be, they've never had, like you said, two great outside corners. It's always been a number one and a guy.
Right.
A number one and a guy. Josh Norman, E.J. Gaines, Levi Wallace.
Yeah.
Like, in all those years, they were good defenses. You might think it was a weak link, but the Bills don't often this was something Joe Marino said with us, or Carl Jones. They all bleed together. We're at camp. We talk to so many people. That the Bills, they do a great job of protecting their corners on the outside. It's not often that they're putting them on islands.
Right.
But when they do, you know, teams are maybe going to exploit that. And Benford's great out there in man coverage, no doubt about that. He's not always asked to play man. He's just great when he does. All right. Hairston could have given them that lockdown ability, and maybe that's where they make up the gap in the pass rush. That's where maybe the pass rush win rate becomes sacks instead of just, hey, they were good at pass rush win rate, which it feels like we're saying that a lot. Last year was they're fine at pass rush win rate, even though people feel like they didn't have a pass rush.
Yeah.
I
hear that. I think he is potentially important if he is to miss a lot of time. I mean, the setback, does his season start to look like Cole Bishop's last year? If he is not out for the year, where he misses so much of camp and he misses so much of the build up to the regular season that he's just got behind the eight ball, and do they ever feel like they could trust him to put him in a real game? Bishop, they got to that a little bit, but when everybody was healthy, they didn't. I think part of it, too, is he feels like he's my best-case scenario at the position, like, easily. And I feel like they're a little unprotected if he is to be out. I think Tre'Davious White's a great story. I think he is beloved by fans, and I think it would be so cool if he showed up and was able to produce for this team all year long as a starting corner and look like even an upgrade over what you had last year in Rasul Douglas. How likely is that really to happen, though? Sure, he looks good in camp, but what if I had told you at the day after the season ended last year, the Bills, you mentioned, like, they have one of the best pass defenses over a 7-8 year sample here. They were not good last year. They were bad last year in pass defense. They were really bad last
year.
By their standards, but by EPA per play, and like there are a lot of metrics here. Like they were near the bottom of the league last year. And if I told you that pass defense's move was going to ultimately just be, well, they brought Trey White and Dane Jackson back.
Mm-hmm.
If I told you that day after the season, that is not enough. That feels like you are falling well. And I know they tried and they added Hairston, but that's to me what the loss is of him. It's you're trusting now that position, which, by the way, Benford's got his injury problems too. I just feel like they're a little unprotected now if he is out for a long time, because then you've got one guy that I still am queasy about being someone that could play all year for you and do really well at this age and at this injury history. And I've got a number one corner that I know is amazing, but he has concussion problems.
Well, part of that arithmetic, I would say, would include the safety play. And that's Cole Bishop and Taylor Rapp. Last year, the Bills' biggest problem, to me, was safety.
That's what I mean. Like, do you feel like without Hairston being able to play and being like a good rookie, that their secondary is better than last year?
If it's Trey White and Bishop is good?
Instead of Douglas and Hamlin.
Yes, I think their secondary could be better. Yes.
It could be better.
Their safeties were... I mean, it depends who you count on. You want to go to PFF and go to ranking pass coverage of their safeties? They rank like 74th and 99th among safeties.
That's right.
Their best graded safety was Cam Lewis. I mean, they were rough back there.
But then the whole ticket to the secondary being better is Cole Bishop is going to be awesome.
Or at least better than Hamlin. He's going to be a starter. He's going to be an athletic starter. He's going to be what they drafted him to be. He left injured, by the way, for a little bit yesterday, too.
I think he came back, though.
He did, yeah.
Yeah.
Injuries piling up. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Finding out in the chat, by the way, some if you're watching us on our YouTube stream, have a couple of new listeners, streamers, watchers that didn't know we were live every day, but training camp, they fired up the TV. Like, oh, you guys are in studio. You do this every day? Yeah. We do now?
Yes, we do. Yeah.
So if you've been joining us for camp, we do this when we're not at camp, too. So welcome in. If you're listening, of course, the usual way, well, good morning. It's hot again today. 90. It hit 90 yesterday. We were in the heat.
I don't know if you could tell how red my face is. I wore a red shirt on purpose because it felt like I burned up yesterday.
You wore a red shirt to mute the red in your face?
Yeah, I did.
I thought that would bring out the red in your face.
If you have
green eyes, don't you wear green to have your eyes pop?
We should ask our master of streams in there, our Owen. If I wore white, wouldn't the red look more red on camera?
There would certainly be
a
color contrast issue there where you would look like a tomato for sure. But I can hook you up and turn the red down.
Oh wow.
I didn't know that was a capability.
That's performance enhancing.
I could have worn whatever
you
I wanted.
Dial down the red. Wow, look at that.
I'm doing work for you guys in here.
Maybe we'll be like a broadcast when the Bills are playing the Chiefs. We take all the reds out of the stream, so it's just there's no reds.
Yeah, I'll swap all the reds to greens or blues.
You can do that?
I can't do that. Okay, I can turn the red down on Joe, though, if I wanted to.
How crazy can we get with it? I could
make you guys like night creatures, just all black and white, all
interesting.
Like... all crazy
you know what?
Kinds of colors, green aliens.
Howard's coming in at 8 o'clock today. Let's do that segment in black and white. Make him feel at home.
That would be funny.
Let's do that. I think he's coming in. He's on
old-timey music the whole time he's on, too.
Yes.
There we go.
803-0550. All right, so give us a ring. On Hairston, how key is he? And let's get to that. Which newcomer is the most important to making a difference for this team? Because Hairston is near the top, and we'll see if we get any news on him today. We are live in studio. We'll be back at training camp tomorrow for another practice. The Bills are off today. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. Jeremy and Joe here on WGR. Shop online at
NorthtownKia.com. definitely leaves you a little worried for him. You know what I mean? We played a game of football, and we know like those things can happen out here, but it leaves you more worried for him because he's so young and has a super, super bright future ahead of him. You know what I mean? So I just want to see him out here healthy and making plays as he's been doing.
That's Dane Jackson. Part of the story of yesterday was watching reaction to the Max Harrison injury, watching players talk about how it happened, a freak trip up. Dane Jackson, Taron Johnson, the players talking about praying for him, that it's not a serious injury, that you hate to see non-contact. So we don't have any definitive follow-up answer yet. We have a Harrison Instagram story where he says, beyond blessed, thank God, thank you, God, and a picture of him signing a football. So he may know, we do not. And we're like, I don't know, people on Let's Make a Deal guessing what's in a box. Like, what do you think it is? Right? I think that's a show that was very old that I only saw maybe the new version of with Wayne Brady. Howard would have seen the very old version of that maybe. Anyway, if you want to spend 10 minutes on the internet having a good time, check out the Monty Hall problem.
Yes.
You like that?
I do like them. Okay, that's how I know Let's Make a Deal, because I know the Monty Hall problem.
Okay, yeah,
that's
check it. That out.
Because otherwise, I'm going to say, you might want to go like, is Deal or No Deal an updated version of that, in a way?
Yes.
You don't know what's in the case.
It's a significantly less interesting version of it. It's pretty terrible. It always was pretty terrible.
Really?
Yeah. No, there's nothing interesting about Deal or No Deal. Nothing. Well, there never
wanted,
was
it's whether you wanted to gamble and keep going, or if you wanted to take what the banker was giving you.
Totally uncompelling. Never the least bit interesting. Not at all interesting.
I mean, it was on for like 20 years.
What's so's 20 years? This show. Beat you to it. Sal coming up at 7, Howard at 8, posted a question on Twitter. The Harrison scare, which remains undetermined at this point, begs the question, which newcomer is most important to their success this year? Give us a call on that. What's your opinion? Which newcomer is most important to their success this year? Two responses. One said the defensive line, and one said the secondary. You're not allowed to pick a full unit, folks. Which,
yeah, that's
which nice. Indicates, give me a name.
Yeah.
Who's the most important to their success this year as a newcomer? And I'd say based on our first segment, Joe, I think you might say Harrison. Would you? Draft or free agent. This can be Josh Palmer.
Yeah.
This can be Caden.
Palmer would be up there.
This
for
can
me.
Be Jackson Hawes. I mean, whatever you. New player that is the single most important new player to the team this year.
I think Harrison would be really high on my list. Would he be above Palmer and Bosa, though? Because aren't those going to be the top two names here to go through?
Is that because you want to lean on known commodities?
That's the thing.
To a degree?
That's the thing. Like, I think Harrison for the long term is very important. And I think for the secondary, I really think it's questionable whether their secondary gets better if he isn't a contributor this season.
Yeah.
It could, but I don't think that's I would not assume that. So, who would I put above Harrison? He might, I have to think about it, he might be my top answer. Palmer, though, like for me, just the ability to beat man, if he can do that and be kind of a finishing piece to their offense that they didn't have last year that Cooper was supposed to be, then I think he's going to be number one for me. Palmer.
We'll get some calls in on this. 803-0550. I feel like I'm supposed to say Palmer. You know, I'm the wide receiver guy, but now that you did, I got to think a new one.
You could... I'll go with the other wide receiver, Elijah Moore.
Brad Robbins.
The punter?
Yeah, sure, why not?
I mean, Harrison, does he have to be more important than Bosa for this? He doesn't have to be, but it's also what you think is more important. You think the pass rush is more important? You think the secondary is more important?
I mean, you know, all pieces are tied together and important. We'll see. See what John in Detroit has on this. Hey, John, good morning.
Hey, what's up, guys? I love the show. I think the most... as far as the biggest multiplier effect, and I'm crossing my fingers, I love the three defensive linemen rookies they drafted. I think they're all going to be solid, but what I'm crossing my fingers on, and the guy that I'm hoping could be a game wrecker is Deion Walker. If he can be a true impact player right away, I'm talking about a guy where opposing teams are man, we got a plan for this guy. This guy is just unbelievable. Kind of like that Jalen Carter effect. And I know those are really big expectations, but Bean has been trying to find that guy for almost 10 years. And I think more than Max Hairston, more than the offense, you know, scoring all these points and anything, it would have such a positive cascading effect for the whole team. I think, you know, you look at the Jim Kelly years, all those plays Bruce Smith made and Cornelius Bennett. And I think if one of those rookie defensive linemen, you know, not be Bruce Smith, obviously, but be just an impact, dominant player, I think it would catapult them to the Super Bowl. And I love your guys' show, and I'll just hang up and listen.
Thanks, Sean. Yeah, you know, defensive line, one, a guy where I get game wrecker is what you're saying, and I of course, game wreckers would be great. Just someone where the opposing offensive line, it's, all right, well, hey, this week, this guy has to be someone we factor in on every single, you know, protection scheme.
Mm-hmm.
We have to make sure that he's not a game wrecker. Even if, excuse me, even if you don't wreck every game, the knowledge that you can, of course, will affect the way the teams play you. So, Walker, he's not injured. The thing about him is, you know, he came out with the PARS defect.
Yeah, back injury.
Back injury, and the idea was that 2 years ago he would have been drafted really highly. Then he had the injury, and this kind of gets to the Hairston point, Joe. Once there's an injury that shows up in there, all of a sudden a player is battling through that, and it doesn't pay to play hurt because if you play hurt, you don't look as good.
Yep.
You're showing you will play hurt. Anyway, on Walker, we'll see. We'll see. I wonder how many games he's active for this year. I wonder how many times they use him as a – is he a matchup piece? Is he a, we're playing a team that does this, so this is our guy? You know, an early impact for him would be a big surprise. But we'll see how it goes. I think it's gone well so far. The fact that he's already off the injury restrictions, does not have any sort of limitation.
Yep.
That's probably a good sign.
Yep, they're not really managing him right now. He's just kind of going. He could be. I mean, part of he kind of fits under the umbrella also of why Hairston might, I'm kind of working my way back to Hairston being my answer for this question of like who is most important. It's I have a baseline of trust that veterans like Josh Palmer and Joey Bosa, if they're healthy, are going to produce for you.
You're going to get a floor out of that.
Yeah, there's a floor. They might, you know, there's variance on that. They could be amazing. Bosa could have 15 sacks, or he could have, you know, 7. Palmer could, you know, maybe he could explode. But I feel like there's a level of faith that he's at least going to be a part of the offense. He's going to be somebody that helps me to some degree, again, if he stays healthy. And with those rookies, you just don't really know. You don't know what you've got at all. You could have another Kyrie Elam, for all you know. A guy that just you can't trust to be out there on the field and can't play at all. And for that, that's kind of what would lead me to Hairston. His success is so important to this defense because I don't know that I can count on anything from him. Whereas all those veterans that you added, I think for the most part, you should know you can count on something. And that would lead me to picking probably Hairston at the top. Or I guess you use the same logic for like a Walker. I just don't think at that position he's as important to defensive tackle as Hairston is to corner. Because they have so many other defensive tackles.
Logan in Toronto. Hey, Logan, good morning.
Hey, fellas. How you guys doing?
Good.
Good. I think that this season coming up, I think just injury ridden. I was really looking forward to Hairston, but obviously this injury yesterday is a big concern. I think TJ Sanders is due to have a big season on that defensive line, like the previous caller stated. It's just next to Ed Oliver, AJ Epenesa coming up on a contract year. Oliver's not getting any younger. I actually happen to be a Gamecocks fan as well. So
okay. I
got to watch him through play in the SEC. He's a good big body on the defensive line. He played really well next to Dylan Stewart there over his years in South Carolina. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do, and I think he's got a high upside here at Buffalo.
Thanks, Logan. Yeah, Sanders, I mean, let's hope, right? Where they've spent their draft capital on defensive line, like I like to point this out. Edge, they go after a lot. Interior defensive line, it's Ed Oliver at 9.
Yeah.
Dwayne Carter, third round. And before this draft, like that was it. So this year's draft, they drafted as many interior defensive linemen as they had the previous however many years back Ed Oliver was drafted.
That was like 2019.
Okay, yeah. So from 2019 to 2024, they drafted two interior defensive linemen. And this year, they drafted two in Sanders and Walker. So Sanders being like that high investment, and they traded up for him a lot. They swung way up to get him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, expectation comes from a bunch of things. But for me, it's they finally landed on drafting the position, and they were eager to get this player. So I think that brings high expectations to a degree. Mm-hmm. Thanks to the phone call, Logan. Checking in from Detroit and Toronto in that segment. And in the chat, we've got someone in Chicago who's in the
Buffalo's just asleep.
Yeah,
still.
They're the Chicago Mafia. And they see us all the time.
No, I know.
And, you know, they're just like, oh, these old guys. 803-0550, Sal, 7 o'clock. We'll get the latest from him and, you know, keep rolling through. And if we get any Hairston news, of course, we'll pass it along as soon as we can. We've got some big fears about what it could be, but maybe some optimism emerging today about, well, not as bad as it was feared. Which, that those are big words this time of year. That happens around the league, right? Not as bad as feared would be good news to see today on Max Hairston. 803-0550, who's the most important newcomer to this Bills team this year? Jeremy and Joe on WGR. Hey, good morning. Jeremy and Joe live from our Amherst studios. Back out at training camp tomorrow. We'll check in with Sal in about 10 minutes. Yesterday on the golf course, I gave Joe a bit of a trivia question about himself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I saw who was starting tomorrow's Hall of Fame game.
Yeah.
And I said, it's your boy. It's your guy. Your guy is starting the Hall of Fame game.
Yep.
He then proceeded to guess, at least 10.
I guessed about 10 names.
Your first guess was Easton Stick, I believe.
Yep. Then I put a 110-yard shot 3 feet from the hole. And then I think I guess Nathan Peterman.
That was also a guess. You guys know who it is, Josh Owen. You know who's starting. Would you consider this one of Joe's guys?
100%.
Yeah, I think so.
Also, did not know this guy was on the Chargers.
He didn't either, but found his way there.
Thought he was in the Canadian Football League.
You did find your way there. Guess Trey Lance is starting.
Which I would agree. That is one of my guys.
I thought he was going to be awesome, too, to be fair.
I feel like he's your guy just because you like to talk about how his entire arc has been so odd.
It's very strange. He has not thrown the football. I was looking through my old tweets about him because you can always just create a crazy stat about him. Last year this was in the Hall of Fame game also.
He played in that one too?
For the Cowboys.
Look at that.
He threw 42 times in their preseason game. Maybe it wasn't the Hall of Fame game. 42 times in the preseason. That was 7.6% of his total pass attempts since being a high schooler and 16 years old. He threw almost 8% of his career attempts, high school, college, and pro, in one preseason game.
Yeah,
he's got to have the most, sort of accomplished in a career with the least amount of footballs thrown in a career. Right?
Here, I compared him to Bo.
As a quarterback?
Yeah. I compared him to Bo Nix. So high school, college, and pro. Last year before the season, Bo Nix, 2,800 career pass attempts. Trey Lance, 552.
Yeah, he's not ever really played.
He's not played football.
Well, he's playing tomorrow.
He's playing tomorrow.
In the Hall of Fame game. Tomorrow, Lions and Chargers in the Hall of Fame game.
You know, I wonder what would have happened if he doesn't get hurt. He gets hurt for the Niners in the second game that they committed to him. He was the starter for that year. He plays a mud game against Chicago that they lose.
Like a monsoon game. 13-10.
Yeah, no one could do anything. And then the first drive of the next game, out for the year.
Yeah.
And then he never gets back in because by the time he's healthy, Brock Purdy is really good.
The way to win a Shanahan coaching or a quarterback battle is to have the other guys get hurt for a long time. And then you get to go in.
And you're going
to
be good.
And you get your 10 games, and it turns out I can do this.
That's what I mean, though. If he doesn't get hurt.
Does that happen for him?
Is he, pretty good in the Niners system and then grows a little bit? And, is he still the Niners quarterback?
I don't know.
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. Maybe he was so bad that even he could screw that up. But, right, because everybody that goes in that system usually has success.
Sal joins us on the other side. We'll get his thoughts on Maxwell Hairston, some of the other injuries, what happened at yesterday's training camp practice as well. So Bills are off today. We are back in Buffalo. Sal coming up in about 7 minutes here on WGR.